This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Everybody, oh, come right in. It's a new week at the Damage Report. We're very glad to have you here. I'm Johnny Roll. And Brooke is here too. Ooh. How's it going?
Good. I don't know why I did that. Sorry.
It was, as we pointed out before the show, it was very nice of you to stop by on your way to prom. I don't want to keep your date waiting.
Shady.
But they can't
that
even see.
That is so shady.
They
and
can't see. It's
you
a very
matched
frilly.
Me.
Yeah.
Well, he does not come in with a tie on. Let me tell you. What happens is he sees what I'm wearing and he. I'm just his favorite person here. Sorry, Brett. And he goes in the bathroom and comes out matching me. And then to take.
You are half right. Yes, sometimes I do try to match you. Other days I try to match Ja'Cory's pants. But anyway, today it was your dress, so you win, I guess.
Nobody
continues.
Can see why they're really
making
fun
fancy,
of me.
It's a very frilly dress. And if you're on the podcast, you're like, what is going on up in here? Anyway, we've got a lot that we're going to get to today. So stick around for the second half of the show. We're going to have Phil McDuff, who's a writer for The Guardian, who's going to come on and talk about how seriously addressing climate change will require us to seriously change our relationship with capitalism, and we'll be breaking that down. We got so much stuff. We have Sarah Huckabee Sanders being ridiculous on Trump's taxes. We have a little bit of update about the Mueller report. But the bulk of the show, or at least a good chunk of the show, is going to be about the Ilhan Omar Donald Trump feud. So we're going to jump right into that.
Okay.
Just a couple of days ago, Donald Trump used his massive social media following to increase the odds that a congresswoman is assassinated. We're supposed to use like euphemisms and say that he just was attacking her, was maybe inciting something. No, he is willing to have her be assassinated for whatever his purpose is, and we'll debate what that might be. But he posted a video that he got off of the Donald or 4chan or whatever it is that he gets his stuff from that tried to imply that Ilhan Omar was denigrating the people who were affected by 9/11 and then implied that she was linked to the attack or responsible either personally or because she's a Muslim. It's not really clear, but what is clear is that this propaganda video that he posted and then pinned to his Twitter account was designed to rally his forces against her, something he's done before. Against her individually, against other individuals, against groups. Just a couple of months ago, everybody seems to have forgotten. Just a couple of months ago, he threatened to have, he said, we have the military, the police, the bikers for Trump. And you know, they don't usually go too hard unless they have to. Threatening to unleash bikers for Trump on people. And now he's doing it once again. And I'm not gonna play the video because it is just propaganda. Mm-hmm. It's bad enough that it was able to exist on Twitter and it remains on Twitter to this day. But I do want to read a statement that was put out last night by Representative Ilhan Omar, who said, since the president's tweet Friday evening, I have experienced an increase in direct threats on my life, many directly referencing or replying to the president's video. Violent crimes and other acts of hate by right-wing extremists and white nationalists are on the rise in this country and around the world. We can no longer ignore that they are being encouraged by the occupant of the highest office in the land. She goes on to say, counties that hosted a 2016 Trump rally saw a 226% increase in hate crimes in the months following the rally, and assaults increase when cities host Trump rallies. So she is dealing with the immediate aftermath of Trump singling her out for the deranged ire of his more than 50 million followers on Twitter, I think it is. And the Capitol Police are having to work overtime to protect her. And we don't know, maybe nobody will do anything. Maybe it's just calls that are coming into her office and that sort of thing. We know it was about a week ago. Somebody called, talked to one of her aides and said that he wants to put a bullet in her skull. And that was before Trump posted the video. So you can imagine how bad it's gotten.
I think what's so frustrating about this is that how do I say this? There are always people who want to kill politicians. Mm-hmm. There are not always hundreds of people who are willing to publicly say directly on the phone line, on a government phone line, that they want to kill politicians. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's usually, you know, I think there are a lot of people crazy enough to want to kill politicians. Mm-hmm. There are, but there's usually like, you know, one or two just like fringe, just ultimate, just out of it people who are willing to actually call a government office and say it over the phone.
Which is very different than just tweeting.
So many people now willing to get caught, basically. Mm-hmm. Willing to get caught with these threats. And that, you cannot say that that doesn't have anything to do with the fact that their president mm-hmm. is allowing them to be so comfortable. Like, they feel like, well, I'll be okay. He'll protect me.
Mm-hmm.
Just
exactly.
like he protected your motorcycle company.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking, you know, I'm sick of people giving him the benefit of some doubt or something.
Right,
because
no,
I think that we are so far past
disingenuous.
That. But even in what I was saying earlier, I was being too, let's not get ahead of ourselves. None of this is hypothetical.
Right.
None of it. Not 5 months ago, a guy wrote down a list of all of the specifically named targets, Trump's people that he likes to attack on social media, and began sending them pipe bombs. That's the thing that happened. We've moved 10 miles past that at this point. People forget that it even happened. But his fans have already shown that they're willing to try to assassinate people when he turns his attention on them. She didn't get a pipe bomb because at that point, Donald Trump didn't know who she was and hadn't started tweeting about her. Do you honestly believe that if that guy had been sending them today, that he would not include Ilhan Omar on that? That she wouldn't have a chance of having her home or office blown up by a Trump fan? And there are people out there. Since then, we already had the Coast Guard lieutenant who wanted to start some sort of race war by gunning down people, including Senator Blumenthal. Nobody has thought about Senator Blumenthal, including him and his immediate family, without being inspired to by Donald Trump. That is the only reason you appear on a list like that. And so we know how specifically he is inspiring people. And Ilhan Omar is likely to continue to face these death threats, especially when we now get to, I believe this came out today. Today's the 15th?
Yeah, today's 15th.
Today's the 15th. Okay. So he sent that out a couple days ago. We've had multiple days of people saying, hey, seems sort of crazy that the president is trying to inspire an assassination. And here is what he took that criticism, and here's what he tweeted. Before Nancy, who has lost all control of Congress and is getting nothing done, decides to defend her leader, Representative Omar, she should look at the anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, and ungrateful US hate statements Omar has made. She is out of control. Except for her control of Nancy. Okay, so according to Trump, she's anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, and is issuing US hate statements. This is a conservative who doesn't believe that there's hate crimes or anything like that.
Right.
Now they're willing to make an exception. She's in charge of Congress, Representative Omar, who has been a representative for 42 minutes now.
Right.
So she's in charge. Nancy, move to the side. We've got our new figurehead. And she's out of control. And what do you do to something that's out of control? If you're reading his tweet, you don't control her committee assignments. If you're a regular person on Twitter, you're probably not one of her voters. What do you do if she's out of control?
Can I also point out that like he in that tweet, like he obviously seems to think that Nancy Pelosi's ego is as fragile as his own.
Mm-hmm.
Because just like saying, hey, she's your boss, ha 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 ha, that really only affects him. You
that's
know
true.
What
that's
I mean?
A bit of projection.
Like that's
Yeah. Yeah, but he is signaling that, look, the right is about basically, well, two things. The actual thing is transferring money to corporations and wealthy individuals. But on top of that, their electoral strategy is find a person, almost always a woman,
right,
and focus all of the right-wing frustrated white male energy onto it. And Nancy was good for that for a little bit, but he's at least signaling here that he's found someone new. Eventually, it'll turn to AOC or something. We don't know.
Fox Clinton if the, or Harris. And
exactly. If Harris or another woman, if Warren wins, then they will be what's getting tweeted about. But now it's take all of that hatred and turn it on Ilhan Omar.
But just the irresponsibility. He knows how dangerous what he's doing is. He knows that. He's got people telling him that. He knows how dangerous this is. This is not just as simple as him expressing his thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
He knows how dangerous this is. And the president's concern should be not like creating this pathway to violence towards her.
Yeah.
But just stopping that is not, it's not at the top of his list. And that's so disheartening for the leader of our nation.
Yeah. So I want to ask you a question. This I guess is controversial. Uh-huh. Donald Trump has spent the past few days trying to use his social media platform to get someone killed, Representative Ilhan Omar. You're supposed to pretend that that's totally cool, I guess, but should he be on Twitter?
No, and you know that. The answer is no, he should not be on Twitter. There's no excuse for him to be on Twitter. I don't understand why their answer to why, a long time ago, they've kind of like answered why he needed to be on Twitter and mm-hmm. didn't make sense then, doesn't make sense now, because there are so many other ways to get the president's information. They could start back the daily press briefings. Mm-hmm. There's so many ways to get the president's information. So not having him on Twitter doesn't stifle him. Mm-hmm. It just protects their business from him setting up some other situation, him going to Google Circles. I don't know.
Is that a thing, Google Circles?
Do you remember? That was a thing a while back. It never really like popped off. It was like Google social
maybe
media.
Maybe it would. Maybe it'd be the new big right-wing thing. Yeah, anyway, look, whenever you raise the possibility of that, lots of people pretend a lot of things. And one of the things that they pretend is that Twitter is the government. And so the First Amendment influences it. More importantly, though, that Twitter is not allowed to have any guidelines whatsoever. And if you are using Twitter to effectively break the law, incite violence and all of that, doesn't matter. Ignore all of that stuff. We have to let people on no matter what. Even though he sends a tweet, they get death threats. He's going to send another tweet, there'll be more death threats. It's a 100% easily identifiable link. You do not need Sherlock Holmes to figure out what he is intentionally doing here.
Right.
Twitter is not obligated to allow a right-wing politician like this to inspire violence against a woman of color. They're probably not going to do anything, though, because the leadership of Twitter, the founder of Twitter, seems really sympathetic towards that side of the spectrum. And so in the past, they've said things like, by the way, this is before he was trying to get someone assassinated. Back in January of 2018, they tweeted or they put up a blog post saying blocking a world leader from Twitter or removing their controversial tweets would hide important information people should be able to see and debate.
No,
it would also not silence that leader, but it would certainly hamper necessary discussion around their words and actions. Well, and hey, you can't have a discussion without breaking some congresswoman.
Wait, can we put that back up, please, just for a couple seconds? So the first two sentences actually cannot be in the same paragraph together, the only two sentences. So blocking a world leader from Twitter would hide important information. It would also not silence. So would it silence him or
they want to have their right. have their POTUS
It'll
and eat
stop
it too,
him from
I guess.
Tweeting,
I don't know.
But he could say those same things on national television. He could say those same things in the press room.
And he would, and it would not be a solution, but Twitter either has terms of service or it doesn't. And trying to inspire political violence, I haven't read all their terms of service. I imagine you can't do that.
Right.
But when it comes to someone like Donald Trump, when it comes to the future of a person having access to a platform like this, people love to pretend that they can't have any standards whatsoever and anything goes. And if Donald Trump tweeted, literally, kill Ilhan Omar and sent it in all caps, some people would still be saying, well, public square, really important to have an open exchange of ideas. Ideas like you think we shouldn't kill our political opponents. I think we should kill our political opponents. Let's have a debate about that.
Mm-hmm. Then Lindsey Graham would be like, the president can't commit a crime.
Yeah. Let's turn to
so much
exactly,
ridiculousness come from that.
Don't even make, why do you make me think about Lindsay? I almost said Lindsay Lohan. I would prefer to think about Lindsay Lohan.
Same tweets.
Even though she was attacking Lea Michele for doing a live thing as Ariel for Disney, because she wanted it. Okay, you're just jealous. She's a better singer.
You know this.
Anyway, Twitter, actually. It was actually Twitter. There would still be other information on Twitter, like what Lea Michele is up to. Anyway, let's turn to something a little bit lighter. Donald Trump is pretending now that he cares about people who don't take 9/11 and the terror attack that happened on 9/11 seriously and don't approach it with the necessary gravitas. So what was he doing on 9/11 and what has he been doing since then, since 9/11? Well, he was actually asked about his thoughts about 9/11 on 9/11. There was major radio coverage, obviously, as it was going on. And WWOR called him to come on, to phone in and be interviewed. And the interviewer asked him whether Trump's 40 Wall Street building had suffered any damage. And Trump answered, 40 Wall Street actually was the second tallest building in downtown Manhattan. And it was actually before the World Trade Center was the tallest. And then when they built the World Trade Center, it became known as the second tallest. And now it's the tallest. So he's got a lot of faults, obviously. But one of them is not that he can't find a silver lining on a big cloud of dust rising from the remains of the World Trade Center. Yeah. He found some positive thing that came out of it, and it was that his building, I will say, is now the tallest again, or at least was at that point. And one of the co-anchors of that segment was later asked about it and said, Marcus, one of the bookers, dialed him up, and that's when Trump gave the answer he did, which stunned us at the time. Any reaction I had in the midst of everything that was happening was, wow, that's insensitive. It just was. And the other anchor said, I think it was an all of a sudden epiphany for him, and he seemed to just blurt it out.
Okay.
Because that's how he thinks. Mm-hmm. So was he showing gravitas? Did he care about the significance of what was at the time, the worst terror attack, the worst loss of life? Didn't really seem to, and it hasn't gotten much better since then for Donald Trump. During the 2016 presidential campaign, he claimed to have helped clean up the rubble, although there's no evidence of him doing so. He also said he lost hundreds of friends in the attack, but has never named one. And he claimed during the presidential campaign that he saw thousands of Muslims in Jersey City cheering the buildings coming down, something that never happened. You can also add, he got $150,000 from a government fund set up to help small businesses that were damaged in the attacks of September 11th, which technically his business was eligible for, even though it was about a mile away and suffered no damage from the attack.
Right.
He made a little bit of money after the 9/11 attacks. Oh, and he also commemorated it years later in a tweet, it was a best wishes for even the haters and losers on September 11th.
He joked about it with Howard Stern,
mm-hmm.
like joking and laughing about it.
He joked that they should set up a Melania statue.
At Ground Zero.
At Ground Zero.
Yeah.
So again, this is the guy who will never forget how little he cared about what happened on September 11th, how he's personally profited on it.
So upset that she said something instead of horrible something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that doesn't compare to him making an actual joke and laughing with Howard Stern. But okay, I mean, this is all so disingenuous and gross.
It's 100% disingenuous. Okay, we are going to take our first break, though. When we come back, other Democrats, including those running for president, respond to that conflict after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
So we're years into Donald Trump being a thing, and still the media refuse to label lies lies. They refuse to admit what it is that he's doing when he, you know, acts on his worst impulses. Some people still have not figured out what is going on. And so we turn back to Donald Trump's attacks on Ilhan Omar, where he's clearly trying to inspire a strike back, physical violence, political violence, all of that against her. And we've been looking at the different responses of people, especially in the Democratic Party. I expect total silence from the Republicans. You know, what else are they going to do? But on the Democratic side, some people, good responses, good support for Ilhan Omar, and some not so much. So Nancy Pelosi, her first tweet about this, which took a little bit, said, "The memory of 9/11 is sacred ground, and any discussion of it must be done with reverence. The president shouldn't use the painful images of 9/11 for a political attack." And I hate that tweet for a couple of different reasons, because the second sentence is designed to make you think that she's criticizing Trump. But that first sentence is not criticizing Donald Trump. I don't think this is controversial. That's criticizing Ilhan Omar.
Right.
It is saying she was not reverent enough in talking about 9/11. So that tweet is, there are good people on both sides. It's just both sides-ing. That's all it is.
Yeah.
The head, she is the leader of the party in the branch of government that Ilhan Omar's in. If anyone should be supporting her and sticking up for her, it should be Nancy Pelosi, a person who has been targeted for political violence and attacks by Donald Trump. She knows what this is about.
This is nothing, though. They took that. They took it to the House floor after
to attack her.
After she criticized Israel.
Yeah, and so I think that's what this is. That Nancy Pelosi knows what she's supposed to do in this case, but she has her own beef individually with Ilhan Omar and more generally with the new class of freshman progressive congresswomen. And apparently, when it comes to safeguarding the safety of one of those people, she errs on the side of, I don't like them. I think that they're shaking things up too much. I think that they're hurting us. You know, that's for her perspective. And so I'm gonna both sides it. And look, since then, she said the video that Donald Trump posted should be taken down. That's fine. Still comes after you said that apparently Ilhan Omar is as responsible as this
anyone. You agreed with him.
She agreed with him.
Yeah. And the bar just to be treated like a normal human being is so high for black people. And she's black and she's Muslim. And so people, and I think that—
And a woman.
And you know, take this how, no, don't take it how you want it. Like, take it like with what I'm saying. But I think that like people should be very careful about how they speak about someone who is so different in every way from them. And how quickly just normal words coming out of someone's mouth upsets them. And especially if you're supposed to be on this side protecting the Constitution and fighting for humanity and civil rights and civil liberties, I think that a lot of people on Omar's team are not being careful about how they react to people who are unlike them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think that
I'm just overall depressed by this last weekend. Both the what started it, obviously, that's the biggest issue. But seeing Nancy Pelosi, look, she's tried to finesse it a little bit since then. And I'm sure by Thursday, she'll have made a good statement. But it should not take that long, especially when people got out in front of you. And it was very simple. I want to read some of these and I want to give people credit who shouldn't deserve any credit because it's very easy. Don't inspire assassinations. That's the standard I want in this country. And she's sort of against that. So Bernie Sanders tweeted Friday, Ilhan Omar is a leader with strength and courage. She won't back down to Trump's racism and hate, and neither will we. The disgusting and dangerous attacks against her must end. He's 100% right. Very simple. Showed her how to lead, basically. He's in the Senate, obviously, but there's Congress people as well. So let's move on to Elizabeth Warren. The president is inciting violence against a sitting congresswoman and an entire group of Americans based on their religion. It's disgusting, it's shameful, and any elected leader who refuses to condemn it shares responsibility for it. That's even better. Not difficult. It's not difficult. Kamala Harris, for 2 years, this president has used the most powerful platform in the world to sow hate and division. He's done it again, putting the safety of a sitting member of Congress and Ilhan MN at risk and vilifying a whole religion is beyond the pale. I'll be blunt, we must defeat him. That's good too. AOC, so now we're moving to the House here. AOC, members of Congress have a duty to respond to the president's explicit attack today. Ilhan's life is in danger. For our colleagues to be silent is to be complicit in the outright dangerous targeting of a member of Congress. We must speak out. First they came, and she posted a section of that obviously very famous poem. And there, she's not specifically saying anything about Nancy Pelosi, but I'm sure that she acknowledges that Nancy Pelosi is one of those people who is effectively being silent on this. There's others who did a great job. Julian Castro, I am grateful for Ilhan's courage and leadership, and I stand with her and with others targeted by the president's anti-Muslim rhetoric. Kirsten Gillibrand,
This is so bad. It is disgusting. This is infuriating.
Well, here it is. As a senator who represents 9/11 victims, I can't accept any minimizing of that pain. But Trump's dangerous rhetoric against Ilhan is disgusting. It's a false choice to suggest we can't fight terrorism and reject Islamophobic hate at once. A president should do both. Okay, it's well, you're doing three things.
So
you're doing
bad.
Those two things and throwing Ilhan under the bus for what you believe she said.
It's okay, so bad.
She's
that
that's the worst
so bad.
Of the people who are running for president. That's the worst. There were great tweets as well from Jay Inslee Beto condemned Trump, but didn't specifically mention Ilhan. Buttigieg had a good tweet. Klobuchar, Gabbard, Booker, Hickenlooper all tweeted in support of her as well. It's not complicated, ain't hard. And only a few of them managed to mess it up. And it makes you wonder, why is it that they can't simply condemn inspiring political violence?
Doesn't make me wonder, but.
No.
Doesn't make you wonder either.
Yeah. Yeah. But it is disappointing.
Right.
And especially in this case, they're once again going after a woman in politics.
Right.
So you should be even more cognizant of what they're trying to do. And so that is disappointing.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's. How much time we got? We only have one. Okay, so we're gonna end just a little bit briefly. We'll come back. We got so much more to talk to, so stick around. Welcome back to the show, everyone. We were talking about bears during the break, but we're not gonna.
It's such a morning show during the break.
Yeah, I don't think we can keep talking about it. You wanna talk about bears?
No,
it would be fun. Hey, look, if our government gets its act together, and we start seriously addressing the major crises facing our country. You know what? We're gonna start talking about bears.
We'll talk about teddy bears.
I might like review books. You know what? I'd love to do that. I just wanna talk about games. We'll play a board game someday.
Board games. I'll play a board game, yeah.
We are a long way off from that. And this is gonna demonstrate that. One of the Donald Trumpiest scandals that we've had to deal with so far since he became president came out over the last few days. It was initially leaked that he had been considering taking migrants who've crossed into the US, busing them to sanctuary cities, quote unquote, and just leaving them there. And that sounds crazy, right? That's a conspiracy theory. And in fact, people who work on Trump's immigration policy came out and said, initially after that reporting came out, and they said, yeah, look, someone had briefly mentioned something like that, but obviously that never went beyond the hypothetical stage. Mm-hmm. And so then the scandal was done and we can move on. Oh no, wait, Donald Trump started talking about it again and he said this.
We could fix that in so fast if the Democrats would agree. But if they don't agree, we might as well do what they always say they want. We'll bring the illegal, really you call them the illegals. I call them the illegals. They came across the border illegally. We'll bring them to sanctuary city areas and let that particular area take care of it, whether it's a state or whatever it might be. California certainly is always saying, oh, we want more people. And they want more people in their sanctuary cities. Well, we'll give them more people. We can give them a lot. We can give them an unlimited supply. And let's see if they're so happy. They say we have open arms. They're always saying they have open arms. Let's see if they have open arms.
First of all, no human being is illegal. Mm-hmm. Also, this is such a stupid self-own because it's not a problem to send undocumented immigrants to sanctuary cities because the leaders of these cities have already decided that the criteria to be a human being is equal across all people.
Yeah.
So, okay, send them to states and cities that are willing to protect their lives. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like almost this needs to be done. I don't know. I'm not afraid of a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. I like living around people, so I moved to LA.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm willing to live around people, which is why I'm still in LA.
Yeah.
That's not my problem with this. Yeah. My problem is that he is projecting all of his biases and hatreds on other people.
Right.
He is either he honestly believes that these sanctuary cities want these people and he thinks he's punishing them because he actually believes that they will commit crimes and things like that. We know that it's not actually true. He's wrong there. Right. But maybe he actually believes that, or maybe he's implying that they don't actually want the immigrants, that secretly he thinks that liberals are secretly as hateful and xenophobic as he is. The issue here really is that the DHS says that they legally can't do that. He doesn't care, he still says it. ICE says they don't have the money to do it, he doesn't care, he still says it. And even logistically, if you were to do this, okay, well, you're specifically sending them to places that say they're not going to work with ICE and other the agencies that would try to get these people back. So good luck getting them back again. It's so stupid. It's Trump's presidency. This scandal is Trump's presidency. It's really, really stupid and really, really cruel. And you just lump those two things together, that's all he is.
And like, where's he gonna get the first handful? Like at the people who have jobs at all the Trump properties?
We don't even know because like, maybe it's people that are crossing
the
border.
On one hand, he's like, when this benefits me, you guys are humans. When this benefits me, you guys are monsters.
Exactly. It makes no sense. Again, Really, really stupid, really, really cruel.
Yeah.
That's gonna be the subtitle of the book I write about the Trump presidency.
The president of the United States stood up and called a bunch of human beings, let alone the fact that they're human beings, who are running from danger in their home countries, danger that former presidents of this country created, but let alone like that he called them illegals.
Yeah.
Just like, and he thought it was clever and cute, and it's horrible.
Yeah, exactly. Stupid, cruel, also horrible. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to some other news.
Okay.
Look, it broke this morning that on Thursday, supposedly the redacted version of the Mueller report will actually be released. So if you like taking a look at pieces of paper that have a lot of Sharpie on them, Thursday is going to be a banner day for you. But anyway, look, it is coming out. And Donald Trump has actually been tweeting a lot over the past 24 hours about the report. Remember, the report that 100% completely exonerates him. No collusion, no obstruction, even though that's not even what the Barr report says, let alone the Mueller report. But he's attacking it. He's attacking the report that fully exonerates him and takes the dark cloud off of his presidency, which is interesting. It makes a little bit more sense once you hear what's actually going on behind the scenes, which will be revealed at least in part by John Carl, who's recently on This Week to talk about it.
It's in broad brushstrokes. Emmett Flood in the White House counsel's office has been briefed on the logistics, the timing of the release. They've been briefed enough to know that the White House will not invoke executive privilege to try to get further redactions. But George, there is significant concern on the president's team about what will be in this report and will be unredacted. The good news is already out there.
Even stuff that will be unredacted.
Yes. The good news is already out there, broad conclusion, no finding of conspiracy between the campaign and the Russians on the hack or on the interfering in the elections. But there is significant concerns about what will be in here, new information on the obstruction of justice question, on what the president was doing regarding some of the big questions. Was he trying to, how far did he go down the line of trying to fire Mueller or talk about firing Mueller? The situations surrounding the Comey firing. And what worries them most is what Don McGahn told the special counsel.
It was former White House counsel.
Former White House counsel Don McGahn has visibility on all of this. It was reported earlier that he spent 30 hours before the special counsel. George, I'm told it's significantly more than 30 hours.
So that is not John Carl saying there's concern about what will be in the report, even the unredacted stuff. That is sources inside of Trump's team saying that despite all of what he said on Twitter and on, you know, video clips, he is worried about what's going to be revealed. And we might see some of that on Thursday.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that he's worried, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not.
Oh, no, like the attacks are obviously projection.
Yeah.
We know that. But it is frustrating. Like they said they're not going to use executive privilege. We noted during that video, they're not going to use executive privilege to get more redactions. But they have William Barr. They will get the redactions, presumably, that they want. That's the whole problem.
Barr's first statement was a redaction.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
It was effectively, it was changing the narrative.
Yeah.
He had been given summaries that he could have provided about the Mueller report, and he chose not to. He chose to do his own thing. And it's so frustrating to live out what you knew was going to happen historically. So just a couple of months ago, when William Barr was being considered for the position of AG, we said he can't become AG because he's clearly being chosen to protect Donald Trump. He already had said his audition was a 19-page letter saying that Trump cannot commit obstruction of justice. There can never be charges about that. It's not a real thing. It can't exist. And we knew he would get in there to protect Donald Trump in a way that Jeff Sessions simply would not do. And we said he can't get in because that's what he's going to do. And we all talked about it. And then a few months passed, and now we're like, oh, I wonder what we're gonna get to see after Barr is done redacting it. But this is what we were talking about. The concern that we would never actually know what's gonna be in the report because his hand-chosen bodyguard, his Brienne of Tarth, is having at the report with a Sharpie this time. And so maybe we will find out some interesting stuff. Maybe there's nothing to find out at all. But if a lot of it is hidden behind a black marker, what will we know? If I'm looking at a page and half of it is redacted, do I say no collusion, no obstruction, we can move on with our lives? Or do we just have to wonder, will we ever actually know what's in the report? That's
no.
What he's here to do, and he's clearly in the process of doing it. And as was revealed in that video, he's briefing the White House on it. So Donald Trump, in his tweets attacking the report, he did that because he knows when it's gonna come out. There's no reason he should know ahead of time necessarily when it's gonna be released or what it contains, but he's being fed all of that information so that he can craft his media strategy. And they can try, as they did over the past couple of weeks, to control the narrative. So many people already believe that they know what's going to be in that report when none of them have seen the report. Donald Trump hasn't seen the report even, if we're to believe what we've been told. William Barr has seen the report. That's it. We know what he thinks about it. Nobody else who's been opining on this topic for the past 2 weeks knows anything other than the 98 words that were released so far. They don't know anything else about what's in the report. And we'll see how much in the end we actually see. Anyway, sorry, we went over. We're going to take a little break. We come back. Climate change, the economy, how much needs to change after this? We're in a moment where hopefully we can finally do something about climate change. Young activists actually organizing today around the world. London has a big protest going on. There's people in Congress who finally take it seriously. But what must actually be done to address this problem? Joining us now, Phil McDuff, writer on economics and social policy for The Guardian. Phil, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Glad to have you here. I recently read your piece, Ending Climate Change Requires the End of Capitalism. Have we got the stomach for it? So let's get to the spoilers. Have we got the stomach for it?
I don't think we necessarily do. I think part of the issue is that if you look at the people who oppose doing something about climate change, you have a minority of people who are the kind of the enemies, you know, the Bolsonaros, the people who just want to burn down the rainforest because they want to burn down the rainforest, that kind of comic evil thing. But what you also have is a much, much wider range of people who are perfectly in favor of doing something about climate change as long as it doesn't mean they actually personally have to do anything or it's going to cost them anything at all. And that's, I think, one of the big problems that we have, that we've got to face, especially within what, you know, we can broadly describe as the capitalist system, is that there's just too many people for whom the personal cost of doing something is real and immediate, and the kind of the future cost, i.e. will our children have a planet left to live on, is still just far too abstract for them. They don't see it as being meaningful in the same way that, you know, gas prices might go up is to them.
And honestly, it seems like there's a lot of politicians that also might fall into that category, that they would be willing to do something as long as it doesn't endanger the chances of them getting reelected and doesn't cost too much, that sort of thing. The article, you actually refer to what's going on sort of from the top as being an example of gaslighting. Can you explain that?
Yeah, well, I mean, the gaslighting is essentially, it's a term of emotional abuse. It's basically when somebody in an abusive relationship with somebody else basically denies reality to make them feel crazy. And I think it applies in this case because it's especially true because you have the people who seem to know what's going on are kind of the 14-year-old, the 16-year-old, the people who are sort of just emerging into their political awareness and becoming aware of reality. And they're going, this is crazy. This is, you know, what are you doing with our black mom and dad? And everyone's going, no, it's fine. And because they're kind of, because they're essentially denying the reality that people can see, the people can see that things are on, literally in some cases, on fire. Mm-hmm. And everyone's saying, no, it's not. This is still fine. We don't have to do anything about it, or we're doing okay, you know, just trust us. So that's sort of what I mean by gaslighting. It's this attempt to get for people who are already in power to tell the people who want them to do something, no, it's fine, we're in charge, when everyone's actually looking at them and saying, it's clearly not fine. It isn't. Honestly, it's not.
Yeah. And at the same time, maybe this is an example of that or a way to further that mission, you have people responding to plans intending to do something about climate change, like the Green New Deal, presenting it as a radical plan, giving you ridiculous estimates of how much it's going to cost, all of that. You talk in the piece about how you don't consider it to be a radical plan. Why is that? And what would a radical plan actually look like?
Well, I mean, I think you have to sort of put that into the context of what's actually going on with climate change. The reason it's not a radical plan is because it's happening far too late. We have about 12 years to basically what people are saying is, if we make some absolutely heroic assumptions about what we can do next, we have about 12 years to keep us this side of absolute catastrophe. And those heroic assumptions assume that we're going to do stuff like reduce all carbon emissions by 50% by 2050 or something like that. And to do that that requires an incredible amount of radical change. It requires ultimately, fundamentally, just readdressing our entire relationship with the planet, with capital, with oil. We have to, you know, we have to do things like make a decision that we're not going to dig up any more coal immediately. But that's just, we can't do it in order to achieve certain things. So the Green New Deal, while it is radical in terms of, we've looked at from where we are, in terms of where we need to get to in order to stop climate change from happening, it's not really that radical at all. And that's sort of the problem. We are in a situation where the changes that need to occur, the realistic changes that need to occur, are so far beyond what anybody in power is willing to countenance that even a relatively moderate level of reform like the Green New Deal isn't radical enough. Or to put it another way, even a quite radical level of reform like the Green New Deal isn't anywhere near what's actually required. So do you see what I mean there? It is radical, but compared to what needs to happen, it's nowhere near.
Exactly. And anyone watching this, I would recommend that you take a look at the article by Phil, Ending Climate Change Requires the End of Capitalism, available at The Guardian. Phil McDuff, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, university takes action to do something about reparations. We'll break that down after this. Just a few minutes remaining. Brooke, take it away.
Yeah, so we just saw this and thought it was interesting. The students at Georgetown University actually voted in favor of creating a tuition increase that would actually benefit the descendants of slaves sold by the university in the 1800s. So specifically, more than 66% of the student body voted in favor of what would be a $27.20 increase, which would be steered into a reparation fund for descendants of slaves the institution sold to pay off debts. The university sold 272 slaves in 1838 to pay off debt, saving the school. So Georgetown wouldn't be there without them selling off these slaves years ago. And Georgetown already does have a memorial for the slaves sold and offers admissions preference for their descendants. I think specifically the descendants of those slaves are considered legacy. So they essentially like automatically get in.
So that is the best version of legacy that I've ever heard of.
Right.
Okay, I hadn't actually known about that part of it. I'm glad that they have apparently already themselves done something to try to rectify to the extent that that could be done.
Also, the two presidents that were responsible for the selling of the slaves, they had buildings dedicated to them, and I think they renamed those buildings years ago and apologized for this. The university still has to approve the resolution, but it's interesting.
Yeah, I don't see why they wouldn't be able to do it. I mean, while I was at UConn, we increased our tuition for a couple of different things.
Yeah.
It's what's interesting is obviously that some right-wingers are going to lose their mind. Like this is probably going to be all over Fox News, I imagine. As if the students are not allowed to raise the money themselves.
Right.
Like I guess they'll say, well, what about the people who didn't vote for it? Because they'll suddenly not care about minority rights, I suppose.
Right.
Or they suddenly care about it when they generally don't. It's not on the students to do this, but if they want to do it, yeah, why would anyone be against this?
Right. And then even if the university, because I think some of the students who were against it were saying that they shouldn't be responsible for a bad thing the university did, that the university should be responsible. But the university gets their money from you. So even if they reallocated different funds, it would still be coming from the students. So
yeah, and look, it says specifically that the sale of the slaves was to save the school at a time when hypothetically its future might not have been so assured. So yeah, I think that it's totally fine for a very, very long time going forward for people to be concerned about the legacy that that had on the university. It's also interesting that we really are having this moment in America where people are talking about reparations in a way that I don't remember in past years.
I don't either. I think me and Brett were talking about this Friday. I still honestly don't believe it would ever happen across the country, but it's fascinating that a university has kind of taken it up on its own to use this as a way to rectify their participation in slavery.
Well, and it's also, it's an interesting model for this. Like, if one university that sold slaves can set up something like this, I know it's not the university, it's the students, but right. I'm sure there are other universities that sold slaves. There are probably, do we believe that state governments didn't engage in this? Possibly prisons that might still be around. Like there's a lot of different, this could go pretty high. I mean, we know that slave labor is used to build, you know, some buildings in Washington, D.C. that the government still uses. So
the White House.
Exactly. Right. And so, yeah, I mean, that might be one of the reasons that the right wing is probably not going to be very happy about this news.
Yeah.
It sets a precedent. First of all, it scares them about the next generation, that the next generation is actually willing to
nice.
Do something. Yeah, exactly. But they also, they love to pitch it as, oh, they're just virtue signaling. They don't really care about it. Well, they're paying.
Right.
So to the extent that they can do anything individually, they are choosing to do that.
Yeah. I think it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, thank you for presenting that story.
Yeah. Wait, do we have time for a favorite thing?
What's that?
No, you tell me. I don't know. You tell me. I didn't even think, but we just have like a few seconds.
We have like 30 seconds. A favorite?
Color. Did we do that already?
Favorite color? I don't like color.
You don't like
animal.
Color.
Go.
Panda. Easy.
Panda? Oh, that's so cute.
I know.
Oh,
I want to hug one.
I might say red panda just because they're so adorable.
Okay.
Not bears.
We're going to lose anything so other, bad.
Anything other than bears, I guess. Okay, anyway, that was fun to fit that in the last second. We don't have much time. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for
always
having
me. Have you. Always good to have you guys watch. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Lots more to get to.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.